Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. He's that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Cowboys regret dumping Tony Romo.
And John Smoltz joins us to review the game one of the NLCS, which starts tonight on FS1. But we start every day with a Whitlaw. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, I got the new T.O. Today it makes sense to analogize Giants diva receiver Odell Beckham Jr. to Terrell Owens. It's a fair comparison, especially if you watch the Philadelphia Eagles curb stomp the Giants on Thursday Night Football. Beckham's dysfunction is now the Giants' dysfunction. And you can now have to wonder, do the Giants regret making T.O. 2.0 the highest paid receiver in all of football? I think they do, and I think they should, because I believe OBJ is actually something worse than Terrell Owens. I think OBJ is Soulja Boy. You remember Soulja Boy, the rapper, the YouTube sensation? Watch me crank it, watch me roll. Watch me crank that Soulja Boy. You! I never liked Soulja Boy. When he became a star a decade ago, it was proof that rap died. It foreshadowed that we would live someday in a world where people actually believe Drake is on the same level as Pac, Rakim, and KRS-One. Yes, we can get Odell Beckham Jr. off my damn lawn. I'm an old man and I'm angry. He's a YouTube sensation. He made one catch, dyed the top of his hair blonde, put up a bunch of numbers in the new NFL Madden League, and people lost their damn minds. Odell ain't on T.O.'s level. T.O. went over the middle and took shots. T.O. was immature, but he wanted to be great. T.O. played in the Super Bowl with a broken leg and put in real work. Odell is a superstar because the league outlawed contact and because Twitter controls the media conversation. Odell is a clown show who doesn't understand the first thing about winning or leadership. He has everybody on the Giants pointing fingers and reacting emotionally. Many of us in the media are reluctant to say what we really think about Odell because we know our comments will be immediately forwarded to Odell's Twitter feed, and Odell's extra emotional butt will be offended rather than adjust his approach. So we lie to Odell and make excuses for his behavior. We act like Odell is as valuable as Julio Jones. We act like Odell is this generation's Jerry Rice. We act like if the Giants only had a better quarterback, Odell wouldn't be a problem. Look here. If Dr. Dre, the greatest producer in music history, agreed to produce an album for Soulja Boy, it would still stink. You know why? Because Soulja Boy can't rap.
Man.
Soulja Boy can dance. He can conceive clever hooks. He can dress the part. But he can't write or perform 16 bars. There's more to being a great football player and the face of a franchise than just catching the football. When they make you the highest paid player on the team, you have to accept the responsibility of leadership. Odell is no leader. It's not within his personality to be a leader. He's a brand. He's addicted to attention. He's an immature child. He's football's Soulja Toy. Watch him crank it. Watch him roll. Watch him make the NFL long for the days of T.O. You like that, Marcellus?
You! You!
Right. Wow. Joining the desk, two great NFL players, former Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, former Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ Brian Cox. Marcellus, start with you.
Yeah.
Am I right about Odell? I think he's worse than even Terrell Owens.
Wow. You could be a little more open-minded in respecting the latitude of the different makeups of a star. The complexions of a star is different. You just talk about two great football players were flanked by, and they had two different demeanors on that same football field. And Odell Beckham Jr., if you want to look at what I say from superstar and what it looks like from Barry Sanders to a Deion Sanders in terms of emotional makeup, passion, and how they show it differently. I'm looking at Odell Beckham, who puts in the work. I'm looking at Odell Beckham, who puts up the numbers. And then he's not getting anything handed to him easily by his quarterback right now. His quarterback is doing him no favors. And this is a guy who's more of the Deion Sanders mode. And a Deion Sanders back in the day, when he put up his numbers, also had his issues with his teammates, Jerry Rice included. And there were times where if there were a social media component, when Deion Sanders was there playing like he played, acted like he acted, did it like he did it, you wouldn't even be talking about Odell Beckham being the worst of that situation. You'd be looking at Deion like he's crazy. So my point is, Odell Beckham is doing what we have seen done before. It's just now we're getting it every second, every day.
Oh, Deion Sanders.
No, I didn't say that. I said emotional makeup and the way he performs and gets out there. Nope.
Deion a little puts bit. In work.
Oh, and Odell doesn't, you just said.
Not like Deion. Deion was flawless, man.
Oh, I get it, but he also didn't play a dependent position. Like, think about Odell's first 3 years. I'm not comparing him to Deion. Stop that. You're going to have me on YouTube looking at movies. I'm just saying that the guy put up all-time historical NFL receiving numbers. You don't get that by just going out of bed and showing up at practice.
They just changed all the rules. Damn near, I can damn near put up numbers out there. Brian?
I don't see him as a gimmick, but his actions are inconsequential to me. From a guy who used to get in a lot of trouble, having matured and having been able to sit in that position where you've been ostracized and your every move being picked apart. To me, if the organization or the head coach goes down and say, we're going to cut out these antics or I'm going to suspend you and not fine you, you cut out all the drama. Because nothing hits harder than taking away my ability to play. You could take my money, I'm fine with it, because if the team fines you, you can write it off on your taxes. So you're damn near kind of forcing them to kind of do something if you need a write-off. But if they take away your playing time, now you got nowhere to look and your Twitter feed ain't happening and they're not showing pictures of you on the sideline dressed in, you know, your apparel, your team issued apparel. So that's the way to cut some of this stuff out. So to me, it's a lot to do about nothing, because if you don't show pictures of him on the sideline, it's no issue. And Joe Green taught me a long time ago. He said, anytime you're on the field, you go out for a coin toss, you playing the game, a warrior always keeps his helmet on. I'm not into this new wave. You always talked about the hair and stuff. It's like he's trying to get likes, or he's trying to make himself a bigger deal than the team. And to me, that's disappointing.
Stop. I have
whenever
to,
I did
I
it.
Interject, because there was a rule in your era and even between your era and his era that was called the Emmitt Smith rule. And that was a rule that was put in place because people of your age range and your age range was taking their helmet off every single time they could to show off for the cameras for marketing opportunities.
For me, I never did that. But I'm a guy that's been in trouble and been in those type situations where I never cost my team. If you go back and look at all the times I acted out, the game was out of hand one way or the other. You can't find a game in which the game was close and I went crazy and got a 15-yard penalty. I always knew how to play it. And most of the time when I got upset, it was at my teammates. And so I'm thinking some of this frustration is to do with how he feels about Eli.
Mm. Well, I think that I like a guy that plays with passion. Don't get me wrong. Deion played with passion. I played with passion. I wasn't a guy that showed it on the sideline like that. That just wasn't me. Mm-hmm. I did not get in trouble. I mean, that was another thing. I feel like that, look, when you play a sport like football, it's already physical enough. It's mental enough. You know, you don't need to act out on the sideline. I really believe that you're right. It's like I'm trying to get more Twitter followers. I do like Odell, but I don't like the antics. The Giants have divvied up and like, look, we're going to make you, if not the highest paid player in the National Football, one of the highest paid players in the National Football League. But in a sense, you have to know how to be a leader on our football team. And he's not doing that. You talked about T.O. T.O., you're right. T.O. is a guy that came and played hard every time. Mm-hmm. You might not like T.O.'s antics, but T.O. didn't do this kind of stuff. It's all about the football team. It's not about the individual. Football is the most sport that is, it's all about the team. And I feel like in this instance, it's all about him. It's like 2 weeks ago when he had the 137 yards. They lost.
Yeah, they lost.
You didn't see him acting like that then. Mm. So that's what it comes back to. And you're right. If you take away the playing time, now look, you still won't take away that money either. But you take away the playing time where you can't be on television, all of a sudden, suspension, that changes everything. Okay, now I've got to come back and I've got to try to be this kind of guy. But this is who he is.
I want to challenge all of you all. Obviously, I didn't play in the NFL. I was a mediocre college player. But I was an offensive lineman. And I looked at the Giants offensive line last night. And Brian, you were a former coach. And this is what bothers me about Odell. I saw a collection of individuals out there for the Giants. I didn't see a team. And where that most showed up is on offensive line play. Mm-hmm. And so that when I'm looking at their offensive line, they can't cohesively interact with each other. Mm. I'm looking at a team that is fractured. I'm looking at Eli Apple blaming teammates and all. It's all a reflection of Odell. And so when I look at the problems, I can see a kernel of Odell in all of their problems, particularly when I look at that offensive line. There's like five individuals out there, five individuals individually getting their butts kicked because they don't know how to act as a unit. And I think that starts with Odell's bad leadership.
I think it starts with the head coach's bad leadership and trickles down Odell. If you're Pat Shurmur and you're the play caller, it's hard to be the head coach for the entire team because most of your time is spent. There may be some defensive guys that he don't even know. And, you know, as sad as that is to say, yep. when you double dipping and you play calling and you're the head coach, you can't do all those responsibilities. And so you need help. So if he don't handle it and he continues to let Odell act that way, and then you see Eli Apple act that way, and you see the offensive line act that way, your team is fractured. It's like this. You want a team like this that nothing can penetrate and you all pulling in the same direction, and that's not the case in New York right now.
Well, it starts at the top. It's not Odell. It's not Eli Apple. It's not Coach Shurmur. It starts up top when they lost institutional control because they sent a memo to this team and said, look, we are not in the business of winning football games. And how did they send it? When we bench our quarterback for football reasons 1 week, and the next week we bring him back for PR reasons. Guess what Odell is sitting there saying? Hey, man, we about this winning or not? And if we're not, I have a problem with that. So Odell had to go on a mission to get his money, and he got his money now. Now he's on a mission to let them know we're trying to win games, and you know why we can't win games.
And that was my point when you said Odell is on a mission. He had an opportunity to not sign a contract if he was not happy with them putting Eli or installing Eli back into the game. When they went out and got Saquon Barkley, that's a good choice if they didn't think any of the other quarterbacks were franchise guys, right, which could possibly be the deal. But if the head coach took the job, I'm sure in the interview process at some point it came up, who's your quarterback? He could have brought Case Keenum with him. He could have brought Teddy Bridgewater. All the guys he worked with in Minnesota, he could have brought one of those. But instead, he said, I can win with Eli.
Yeah, he said Eli has something in the tank still.
Let me ask both of you, not to leave you out, Eric, but you played on the offensive side of the ball.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
The defensive side of the ball is the emotional side of football.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at a guy on the offensive side of football where it shouldn't be this emotional, and that's why he's disruptive. Is he too emotional? Just as a player in general, but particularly for that side of football?
I don't think so. Michael Irvin comes to mind, playing against a T.O., even though T.O. did it from a different place, emotional space. T.O. certainly got a lot of attention, but it wasn't coming with the look at me kind of feel and connotation that it does from Odell. But maybe that's just the lens we're looking through because of the cameras, the access, the Twitter. We get to know everything about you, so therefore we look at you from a different perspective. But I've seen many balling receivers out there trying to say me first.
And I'm going to say this. Is it emotion or is it frustration? Because a lot of times when I got in trouble, I was frustrated with a teammate. For instance, we'd sit in meetings and we'd go over plays and we'd talk about things that we wanted to get accomplished during the game. and one guy would fall asleep or he'd be doodling or doing something, and you get to the game and that very thing happened, I would explode and people would construe it as me exploding at the opponent when really I was frustrated with my teammate who fell asleep or was doodling during the time we were trying to get this play right. So I would surmise that some of it's frustration more than emotion.
I agree. Frustration is big, especially for an offensive player, for like a running back. We depend on our offensive line.
Right.
Key example, in Indianapolis, you know, they had got rid of our best offensive lineman, Chris Hinton. The offensive line was fractured. Mm-hmm. They put me behind this offensive line. I'm getting killed.
And I know you're in there yelling,
Amen. You know, you don't want to say anything. And all of a sudden, they start blaming you. Yeah. Well, you're not running the same. I'm like, it's no holes. So fine, I said, you know what it's like? It's like going to Vietnam with a BB gun out there. How about you try that? So you just get frustrated after a while.
Twitter off.
I'm going to say this.
No Twitter back in the day.
End on this note. Look, just as old as we all are, and Marcella's just a baby, but you have to be able to handle frustration sometimes with logic rather than emotion.
Say it, brother.
And so, particularly on the offensive side of the ball.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah.
Logic.
It's all easy to say that up here, though.
All right, welcome back. Eric Dickerson and Brian Cox are back. Let's move to some big stories, starting in Dallas, where 2 years ago, Dak Prescott was the toast of the town. But now he might just be toast. Jerry Jones has Dak's back, but it appears the fans have turned on him with someone launching a change.org petition to bring back Tony Romo. Marcellus, should the Cowboys regret ditching Romo for Dak?
No. I mean, hindsight is 2020. We can't look back now and say, you know what, we messed that thing up. Because at that time, Tony Romo was 36 years old, couldn't stand up straight, couldn't stay healthy for 2 years, two consecutive years. He only played 5 games within those 2 years. So you got to look at a guy like Tony Romo at that time, and you're like, expiration date. I think it's over. And then Dak came in, and all of a sudden the same fan base that now wants Tony Romo back switched to Dak immediately. So all I took from this was the fans have taken Dak to court. The court of public opinion. And Dak Prescott's a defendant in the court of public opinion, and it has power and it has sway. And I think Jerry Jones is on notice as well.
Yeah, I don't think regret is any part of this. I do think, though, the fan base is raising his hands and saying, we don't believe in Dak. And I don't know if he can reverse that feeling. I don't think it's a couple of games that can reverse that feeling. The guy would have to win in the postseason. I think the fans in Dallas believe Dak's a limited guy. He's not a franchise quarterback in their view. I still want to see him with a tight end and a legitimate number one wide receiver again and see if he can go back to being that guy he was his rookie year. I disagree with the fans here.
I don't disagree with the fans, but I will say this. Where they miss a Tony Romo-like guy at is on the sideline and a veteran guy that can get in his ear, which was most helpful because one of Tony Romo's best attributes was his intelligence. And so he could help Dak see stuff. They got a young backup quarterback now. Hell, Dak's teammate at one point is now the quarterback coach, so there's nobody really in his ear to help him come along, if you will. And I think that's where the biggest issue is with Dak, but I don't think Romo should be back. I'm not a huge believer in Dak either.
I like that. You know, I look at the L.A. Rams in 2016. We drafted Jared Goff, and people thought he was a bust. But when we got Sean McVay, all of a sudden now, boom. The running game, we have Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley, he was a bust. They got Zeke. The defense for the Cowboys wasn't good. Defense is good this year, but the offense is struggling. It's almost they just switched places. It really is. And I keep going back to Jason Garrett. I mean, like Jason Garrett. This offense is vanilla. It's like the old Rams. You almost know what's coming. When the Rams in 2016, I said, okay, here come the off tackle right run, right? Or here come up the middle and here comes the check down. It was simple. And Cowboys are the same way. It's not about Dak does not have a number one receiver. The guys say, we're getting separation. Okay, separation can be this much. Right. But real separation in the NFL is this.
Yeah, what we're talking about
some real separation. The problem is not Dak. I think is you have to look at the head coach. And I like Jason, but no one wants to say, hey, what about the head coach?
Is it the head coach or the coordinator? Would you say Linehan?
It's Linehan and the head coach. But you know what? Mm-hmm. Jason has been there long enough to have, you know, you're a Cowboy. You think you're supposed to be in the Super Bowl every year. The Cowboys supposed to be in the playoffs.
Not the year I was there, but I hear you.
But you know what I'm saying.
We ain't think
so people, it's an expectation. So they expect, and they're not getting. And maybe they're not that good. Like, even next, what do you see the Cowboys are going to do? Where do they go from here? I mean, they don't have a receiver. I look at my old team. I look at my team, the Rams. They made play. They went out and got players. They have
after
to go
you
out.
You got the coach fired.
Hey, if that's what it takes. But you know what? You know what? Keep Jason Garrett. I want y'all to keep him. Don't fire him. Keep him now. I just want to say, keep him.
I do think a move at the head coach could breathe life back into Dak, and this is why I'm reluctant to give up on him. I remember in Kansas City they had a little little quarterback named Rich Gannon, and he was Elvis Gerbuck's backup. He got out there. It didn't look the greatest, but he kept being effective. And he didn't look like anybody's franchise quarterback. And then he gets to Oakland and gets with John Gruden. And the next thing you know, he's an MVP candidate. And then he leads with Bill Callahan as the coach. He leads him to a Super Bowl. And late in his career, Rich Gannon became a big-time quarterback in this league. And when I look at Dak, I see all those same attributes as Rich Gannon. I just don't see the pieces around him, and I don't see a coach or an offensive system that's making it easy on him.
Well, you know, sometimes it gets validated where you got selected. Sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. Like a Tom Brady sixth-rounder, messed that one up. Sometimes a fourth-rounder comes in as a fourth-rounder should. And what greatness is not getting up there one time, is consistent excellence. And what we haven't seen from him is consistent excellence. And it's starting to validate the fact that he had his issues coming out of college when you thought that this was a Heisman hopeful. And then remember, he came back and we were like, ooh, that was regression. And then he came out his first year, rookie year, amazing. Then it's been continuous regression. So maybe he's living up to what he actually is and not just that first year.
All right, to last night's big story, the Eagles' demolition of Eli Manning and the hapless Giants. The win was by far Philadelphia's best performance of the year, with the offense finally returning to championship form while the defense bottled up every Giant not named Saquon Barkley. Marcellus, are the Eagles back?
Oh, yeah. Good again.
All the way back. They back?
All the way back, man. And they needed a moment like this, especially Carson Wentz. Think about what Carson Wentz has went through. And no one wants to talk about this, and I know Carson Wentz is not going to give us fuel for this fire, but I'm going to say it. I'm not trying to win a Super Bowl when I'm not the guy who led us to the Super Bowl. I want the ring, thank you. But Carson Wentz had to watch his backup get the Super Bowl MVP. Carson Wentz is sitting there like, yay, golf claps. Okay, I'm in support. I love it. Now it's my turn again to return to pre-injury form. And last night was the first time we saw MVP form Carson Wentz once again. So he's been in a weird place. They've been in a weird place with the Super Bowl hangover. But are they back? Yeah, because I think everything got
I'm not remotely crowning them. They played the Giants.
That's what I'm
night,
saying. And they
the
played the Giants.
Were trash.
Whoa. Look,
Jason Peters got benched last night in the middle of that game.
Hold on. The
Eagles still got problems. The Giants could have made a couple of plays, just a couple of plays, and that whole game would have been different.
Who were the Giants coming into this game? This was the
trash.
team that lost to a Carolina team that is very good this year and only lost because of some NFL tying field goal, 63 yards. So other than that, this was a team chomping at the bit, ready to roar, and they got smoked from play one. I'm telling you, four sacks on Eli Manning, the pass rush, disrupting the receivers and the timing. They look good all around. I think Philly's back.
Man. No, they're not back. No, they're not back. The DBs never got challenged deep in the game, which is where Philly has struggled. Their front has done a good job of sacking the quarterback, pressuring the quarterback. But the New York Giants right now are one of the saddest franchises in the NFL.
Yeah,
and that's a sad thing to say, because everything that organization has meant has been one of the standard bearers of the National Football League, but they are non-competitive. From the coach, first year, down to the players, they all need to take a look in the mirror and they need to get on the same page. They didn't look competitive from play one. On the first interception down the line, other than Saquon Barkley, they look amateurish.
And I wonder why.
Amateurish.
You know how it is when we play the sorry team. Did they lose or did we beat them? I'm looking at Philly like, okay, you could say they weren't competitive because we beat it out of them. Like, you don't walk into any game and just say, I'm going to lay down. Somebody push you down. That's what happened. They put
them
down.
It's a combination. I will give you, a combination. You know,
they said sack and Eli. We could sack. I think I could sack Eli. I can get Eli right now. I'm not even a defensive player. Look, are they back? They played an okay game. They played a weak football team, a terrible offensive line. The Giants got a terrible offensive line. The only thing that the Giants have is, to me, OBJ when he's not having his antics and he's getting the ball, and Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, I look at the Eagles. You know, teams have a swagger about them. You know that as a player. You come out, you're like, hey, we feeling it. The Eagles right now, they don't have that swagger about them as they had last year. I don't see it. It may come. You know, it may come next week. It may come in late October. It may come in November. But it has to come. This is not the same team that we saw in the Super Bowl last year. Even Carson Wentz, after his injury, he got sacked quite a bit so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look like that same, like people talk about, oh, MVP, oh, he's the greatest, he's this, he's that. He's not looking like that guy right now. So are they back? They won a football game. And you take a win. You don't care how you get it.
Right.
You take the win and you be happy with it. But are they back? No, they won. Let's play. They won.
I felt like Philadelphia's front four, Fletcher Cox, Michael Bennett, that group looked incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But then I said, well, is it them or is it the guys they lining up against?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the Philadelphia team, again, Jason Peters still's not right at left tackle.
Yeah.
He got benched at some point during that game. The Eagles' offensive line was having some problems. I don't believe Carson Wentz got away with some balls where his hands was hit and Nelson Aguilar bailed him out. And some that game could have turned very competitive if the Giants were able to make just one or two plays.
You guys are now dissecting it because you want to sit there and say it's not the same team we saw win a Super Bowl. And that's the process. That's the journey. That's what they're on. But did yesterday show that they're back on that road to success? Are they back on that path to success? Yes. Are they at the summit? No. But this is a team in a weak division that beat up on a team that was in a must-win mode, desperate, and full of emotional fire. And they stomped that from play one. That's hard to do.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Eric Dickerson and Brian Cox are back. Let's return to New York, where the Giants got embarrassed last night by the Eagles, but did have one bright spot. Rookie Saquon Barkley, who turned nothing into something over and over again and finished with almost 230 yards from scrimmage. Meanwhile, $95 million man Odell Beckham Jr. didn't do much besides throw a huge tantrum on the sidelines. Marcellus, who do you think is more important to the Giants' future, Saquon or Odell?
I'm going with Blondie. I'm going with Odell. If you think about what Odell does for this team, it gives him the greatest chance to win. Think about it. Odell went for eight catches, 131 yards, and threw a touchdown and caught a touchdown. And they almost won a game against a very good team.
Oh, almost won.
But then we watched the next
week. What category? They got wins and losses and almost wins.
There we go. The almostes.
I'm going impact in this conversation. And then I watched Saquon Barkley go out there for what? 229 all-purpose yards. Amazing performance. Destroying it. And they got spanked. Smoked. So just in terms of impact by position, Odell Beckham, when he's right, this team is right. When Saquon has been right all year. And how are the Giants looking? Not so good.
I completely disagree. I think one thing the NFL is going to have to come to grips with is running backs are still more important than wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're getting a lot of proof of that this year.
Thank you.
It doesn't matter what Odell Beckham Jr. does. You build your team around some diva wide receiver, you better be prepared for a roller coaster ride. You build your team around a running back like this. They got into a point last night where Pat Shurmur, they were so frustrated, they just quit calling plays and just said, hey, flip the ball to Saquon and let him make some magic happen. Odell, you can't do that. Odell is overvalued, overhyped. He's undersized. He doesn't catch balls over the middle. He's a sideline receiver that does tantrums. Saquon Barkley is the future of the team.
I would agree. He is the vessel that all blessings flow for this New York Giants offense.
And so
when you look at it, he is the second running back in the history of the National Football League to average 100 yards per game through his first six games, and that's run and pass combined. The guy has the vision, he has the speed, he has the ability to pick up blitzes. He touches the ball more than the wide receiver position. So for that fact, I would say he's the guy that they have to build a team.
He's a leader, too.
Most definitely, and a leader on that football team. I don't think you'll never see him act like that on the sideline. Look, I'll say the Rams, that team is built around who, pretty much? Todd Gurley. The Cowboys, even though they're not winning. What makes that team grow? Zeke. The Steelers, even though he's not in camp.
Connor.
Le'Veon Bell. Most definitely. If you've got a top-notch running back, not just the running back by committee. When they go running back by committee, that means we ain't sure if he should be the guy. Yeah. But when you got a guy that's the guy, you build your football team around him with a great offensive line. Most definitely got to have a quarterback, which they don't have right now. So, for sure, you have to go with Saquon Barkley.
We having a likability conversation.
Hey, no.
Because y'all not hitting me with these numbers, these facts. This team hadn't scored 30 points but one time since Tom Coughlin's been there. And the one game they scored 30 points, who had the better game? Odell Beckham Jr. Since 2015, they haven't scored 30 points. But then we see, in contrast, when Saquon goes off. And they have,
that's
what, 13
week.
Points? 13 points? That's my point. When Odell does it, all of a sudden you see the offense click at a different level, different dimension. No. Saquon's always doing it.
Saquon Barkley changed field position on a screen pass at some point in the game where they still had a chance. They got it down to the 15. And then it was penalties in the dumb offensive line that took them out of scoring position. There were things beyond Saquon Barkley that hurt them. He was able to change field position at the drop of a hat. When you go back to that game a week ago, this almost win that just doesn't count in the NFL.
It's better than what happened last night.
Let me tell you, I can give you the specific reason why they lost that game. Odell Beckham muffed a punt. It went off his foot. He set Carolina in easy scoring position. Those were the game-deciding plays. So we can talk about his 8 catches, 131 yards. No one wants to talk about the turnover he created that really swung the game.
I want to ask you a question, Marcellus. You was a defensive player. Yeah. Now, would you rather go against a team that's throwing the football or a team that's running the football? And I mean running it, not with this bad offense.
I'd rather go against a team throwing the football because I get paid off them sacks.
But really, my defensive player, y'all, you know, man, if they run, you like,
don't pound it on us.
Thank you. Don't pound it on us, man. Because all of a sudden, you're like, man, why come y'all ain't making no tackles? Hey, what's your job down there?
and my point is this. Just by sure touches, last night Odell was 2 for 14. Mm. 2 catches, 14 yards. Mm. The 8 for 31, when you look at the numbers that Saquon is touching the ball 20-plus every time, and he's the second player in the history of the game with all these Hall of Fame running backs that we have to have 6 games, 100 yards in his first 6 games, that's impressive, man. You got to say that this guy is the catalyst for that offense.
Impressive, yes. Both guys are impressive when they're rolling. But which one has the greater impact on this team to have a win and also to be optimal in offense? It's when Odell is rolling. We witnessed it last night.
All right, to Cincinnati, where the Bengals host the Steelers Sunday in a matchup that has produced some of the more explosive moments in football over the past several years. The last time these teams played, there were 20 penalties totaling 239 yards, and Big Ben seems to think the new rule changes might not be enough to curb the friction between them.
Some of the stuff that happens in that game is the rules were made for it before that, you know. So, well, it's not about just the physicality of the football game. To me, it's when it gets the extracurricular, the dirty stuff that is you wish would be cut out of it and hope is cut out this time.
Definitely. You know, every game I've been in against the Steelers has been some type of aggressive hits or, you know, something dirty going on, you know. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's football. You know, you can't go out there and play scared. You can't go play frightened. You just got to go out there and hit. It's hit or be hit.
All right, we're going to keep it 100% authentic and real in this conversation. The Bengals and the Steelers do not like each other. Mm-hmm. And this game feels like when two city schools in high school get together and it's like, oh, my God, mama, you better take your big brother with you tonight.
Yeah.
And if anything pops off, run your ass home. Yeah. You don't need to be a part of that drama. Mm. And so the real question here is, because there's going to be a lot of spotlight on this game, will Mike Tomlin and Marvin Lewis control their football teams and just keep it on the field, keep it clean, and not have this turn into a controversial game?
I've been there, brother. Mama, can I go to the game? Who playing? Crenshaw Dorsey? Crenshaw Dorsey? Hell no.
Hell no.
Ain't going to no Crenshaw Dorsey game. I love my son. Yeah. So I've been there before. I think that this is a situation where both teams have bigger fish to fry, especially Cincinnati. It's time to start thinking, even though you got to go through the regular season, you're off to a fast start, y'all need a meaningful playoff win. We need y'all to do something when it matters most. So you can't get caught up in an alley fight narrative. Like, that was cool when you were trying to prove to Pittsburgh, hey, we're formidable too. We're a real team. But now you are a real team. It's time to show that confidence and walk away and be the bigger man in some of these situations. Because all the little antics and all that kind of behavior that comes back to haunt them and made them lose a playoff game is something that's beneath them and it's behind them.
Oh, no.
Oh, no?
Oh, no. I had this exact situation with your Buffalo Bills. Mm. Like, they couldn't stand me. I had FBI agents outside of my room because it was that much for me. When I went to Buffalo or when Buffalo came to Miami, I was looking for blood. And so I understand, I've matured now and I've kind of backed away from that. But I understand what this process is. You go out there and you make them wake up Monday morning seeing your face. Mm. That's what you're trying to do in this game. And bad blood makes for great rivalries.
I agree with that 100%. I wouldn't doubt it if it's bounties in this game that you don't even know about. Y'all know what bounties are.
Right.
They have them out there. Mm-hmm. It was like when we played the San Francisco 49ers. It's like the Dodgers play San Francisco now. They don't like each other. You know, you want to say, okay, we're going to go out here. We're going to be gentlemen. But sooner or later, some going to jump off. This is football. This is football. Somebody going to hit somebody. Somebody going to say something. And here we go. Oh, it's like that? Oh, okay. It's like that? So I don't think they can control throw the emotions.
I would intentionally miss a play to hunt a guy. I remember trying to get Andre Reed one
can't
day.
Happen in this NFL.
I was hunting him.
Brian, it can't happen in this
NFL. It can happen, just get fired.
No. Right, and we cool now, but back then, oh, man, I would take a play off and beeline directly for him trying to head.
I got me a guy like that, too.
But, Brian, in this NFL,
yeah.
I guarantee you Roger Goodell, Troy Vincent, they've told this officiating crew.
Call me on Monday.
Just remember, Juju Smith-Schuster got Burfict the last time these guys played.
Got him.
Burfict got Antonio Brown. There's so much bad blood between these teams. We've seen Joey Porter on the football field trying to get into it. If this goes wrong for Tomlin and Marvin Lewis, there's going to be some heavy fines and maybe even suspensions. This could be a bad look for these guys. It's on these head coaches, man, to go to their Brian Coxes and calm them down.
Ain't no head coach in this league. Exactly. So come to me and tell me when I got an axe to grind, don't do it.
I agree with you. I agree, 100%.
So the thing that I would encourage them to do is say, hey, listen, okay, I know you got that extra grind, but let's get a lead in the game and then you can go take care of your business.
Let's keep it to a minimum.
Let's keep it to a minimum. But ain't no way. I don't care about no fines.
But do you care about the game?
See me on Monday.
You care about the score.
That's what I'm saying. Let me get a lead. If you come to me that way, I'm like, okay, I can do that. But I'm going to get that guy.
But what if you get fined and punished and suspended and you're not there for the next game? The next meaningful game. You don't care.
Don't care.
And you mad at Odell saying he's selfish.
I don't
but
care.
Then you got to ask the grind. It's all about Brian Cox.
I can admit that. That's one of
see,
my
see, that's a big man. That's
all of Odell admits that he's selfish is fine.
One of my weaknesses is I'm stubborn, and when I make up my mind to do something, it's hard to change. Now, my wife has helped me with it. But if I say I'm going to get somebody, I'm going to get that some.
So let me ask you. You ever had any bounties?
Yeah, I didn't have some.
There you go. I knew it. I knew that one out there. I knew it.
And so
we want to say the right thing, but I'm just being real.
No, I appreciate the transparency of it, yeah, but I'm just saying, for Burfict, his career, his next suspension will be very lengthy. And so if he's got that mindset that you're talking about, Brian, it'll go beyond this game. He could end up, they could suspend him for 8 games, who knows what, as many times they suspend it, which will hurt the team down the long road. And if it happens, I'm just telling you, there will be some fine levied against Marvin Lewis, I think, as well. And if anything goes wrong with Pittsburgh, they're going to come for Tomlin, too. It's a bad look.
How can you fire the coach? They can't control what a player does.
Fine.
That's what I'm saying. How can you fire
the
coach?
Man, two brothers out there coaching.
Think about this. You got to think about this, Jason. If a guy has done something, say he takes a cheap shot at you, not does it once, twice, but 3 times in a game, you're just going to say, oh, man, that's cool.
I don't want to get suspended. Getting that
song. Oh, I'm going to get you.
At
all costs.
At some point.
I might meet you on the bus.
At some point, the Steelers and the Bengals have to acknowledge, hey, man, we got to tone it down.
No, because what people are missing is you're not looking at this guy trying to take my knee out. You're not looking at this guy trying to effectively end my career, because they chop block, they can set you up with chop blocks. There's many things that happen during the game that people don't see, and it becomes personal. It's like you telling me that you're gonna find me and this guy and try to end my career three times. I'm getting that dude.
Lord help us. I can't wait to see this game. All right, welcome back. I'm Whitlock. He is Marcellus Wiley. Let's move to the NLCS. We're joined now by one of the guys calling the game tonight, Hall of Famer John Smoltz. John, do you think Clayton Kershaw will use the NLDS Game 1 snub as any motivation tonight?
Well, I'm sure he'll use whatever he needs to. Clayton Kershaw has had to deal with the postseason questions that we don't ask about him in the regular season. But what he has done and what the Dodgers have done is won 10 of their last 12 that he's pitched. So I think he's answered a lot of questions as he's gotten older. He's dealt with some injuries. His innings have been limited. And I think he's the freshest part of his career when you think about all the workload leading up to it. So he has tremendous motivation. And certainly Game 1 starters know how important it is to get off to a good start, especially on the road.
Yeah, to delivering it tonight, it would be amazing towards him exercising those postseason demons. But have you been able to put your finger on why Kershaw does seem to be different postseason time?
I think there's a couple things that lead into it. A couple times he had to pitch on three games rest. He's been forced to kind of carry the load in the past and probably wanted to do so much that when you're a regular season greatest pitcher of our generation, you can't be greater than that. And sometimes you feel like you need to be a little bit better because everybody's gunning for you. The one thing in the postseason I can say is nobody takes in a bat off. Every attention to detail is magnified. And certainly you're going to approach a great pitcher like Kershaw differently in the postseason. So some can say maybe it's just an effort of trying so hard. But others, like myself, would say keep giving him the ball and watch how the numbers keep coming down. I think Clayton Kershaw will prove that it's just a matter of time.
John, Christian Yelich is a favorite for the MVP. He's also one of the few guys that has consistently had success against Clayton Kershaw. Will that success be any factor tonight?
Oh, absolutely. When you're a starting pitcher, like most people, you circle the guys you don't want to beat you. And typically left-handed hitters aren't going to do that well against Clayton Kershaw. And you mentioned Yelich has. I watched every at-bat. And I would think that he's going to change up his repertoire just a little bit to get him off balance, because this guy is having the MVP year. He's carried this offense, especially in the second half, and you just can't let him beat you. The Milwaukee Brewers basically have a top-heavy lineup. So Clayton is going to look at that top-heavy lineup, and I guarantee you he's going to circle Yelich and say, he cannot be the guy that beats me.
Now, with all the recent success with the Dodgers, where would you rank this year's team, despite last year's team having a better record?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think their depth is much better offensively. I think they can beat you on the bench. They can beat you in the starting lineup. Of course, they hit a ton of home runs. I think they can get a little bit better situational hitting. Their bullpen was probably better last year, but their starting staff is much better than it was last year due to health. And I think that's what's going to take them back to the World Series. If they get there, it's going to be because of their starting pitching. I know analytically everybody likes to mix and match and throw a bunch of pitchers in there, but you watch the Dodgers' innings out of the starting rotation will differ than it did last year. And I think that could be the difference if they are going to keep advancing.
All right, Manny Machado is a problem. Anything Milwaukee can do to slow him down?
They got to find a way to keep getting him to chase and be aggressive. Early in the series against the Atlanta Braves, he was chasing out of the zone, and it did not look good. He did get some big hits in the last game, but I think if you're facing Manny Machado, you want him to be able to get himself out. Because the lineup's so deep and long, you have to pick and choose who you're going to try to pitch. If the count doesn't go in your favor, that's why the Dodgers are so good. They walk. So they hit homers, they hit, and they walk, and they're not super aggressive out of the zone.
Not many people picked this matchup coming into the season, and now you're seeing the Milwaukee Brewers with a huge turnaround. What's been the biggest reason?
Well, they have a lot of confidence in their club. When they made the moves they did in the offseason, their offense, of course, is benefiting from that. And they went out and made some more changes and really solidified that depth that they now can mix and match. But it's their bullpen. If they're going to win the World Series and if they're going to win this series, their bullpen is going to be absolutely huge because it is one of the best. If I think it is the best in baseball right now. They need enough depth out of their rotation so that these guys, the longer the series goes, doesn't get worn out. That's the problem I see when you have this many arms per game you're going to try to pitch. But they're dynamic, they strike you out, and they can mix and match with the Dodgers' depth. So it's going to be a strategy kind of eccentric series. I don't think any starter for Milwaukee is looking to go five innings if that tells you what their formula is going to be like.
John, I don't want to put you in a bad spot having to call the series. So I won't ask for a prediction. I'm going to ask you, do you think one team in this series has an advantage that maybe might lead them to winning the series?
Well, the advantage, of course, you know, you got a big market versus small market, so you got an underdog mentality from afar. Even though the Milwaukee Brewers won the most games in the National League, they don't think of themselves as an underdog. So I think for the Dodgers, their advantage is their depth, their roster, and the experience that they had last year, one game away from the World Series. But as I tell everybody, experience is only as good as if you put yourself in position to utilize it. So the Milwaukee Brewers are going to have to, they're going to have to create chaos. And chaos might come from mixing and matching out of the pen. And if they can win in a five or six game series, if it could be short like it was against the Rockies, that's where their formula for success is going to come in. I think it just adds to the value of what the Dodgers have been through and what they have. So this is going to be one of the most intriguing because market theme is going to be thrown out there, us against the world, Milwaukee Brewers. I think this is going to be an interesting one to sit back and think along the lines with the manager and his strategy. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm certainly looking forward to prototypical starters against a wholesale staff of bullpen that Milwaukee Brewers are going to utilize.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, it's time for me to put Wiley on the spot and get into some hot button issues of the day in a segment we like to call Tell Us, Marcellus. Let's start with Eli Manning, who had a rough night against the Eagles yesterday, throwing a pick, taking a bunch of sacks, and generally looking lost and overmatched the whole game. Today, Pat Shurmur said he still believes in Eli, but after the game, Eagles linebacker Nigel Bradham actually said he looks forward to playing against the aging quarterback, saying, quote, "I mean, I didn't really get the chance to go up against him early in his career, so this is all I know. Just going against Eli in general is a big blessing, a big opportunity to be able to make plays on him." All right, tell us, Marcellus, does Eli deserve all the blame for the Giants' struggles?
Absolutely, all the blame. I mean, everything. And I never thought I'd see Eli Manning become a limo. And you know, I told you about the limos before. Coach is like, oh, Saturday film session right before we got curfew. Coach has got a red dot on somebody. And I never thought it would be on Eli. And he's like, make sure he gets to the game tomorrow because that's how we're going to win. We got somebody on our team, but he's wearing their colors. And it's Eli Manning, man. I mean, opponents are looking forward to playing him because they're going to pad them stats. His teammates are talking about him, whether it's Odell suggesting it or other players reportedly saying it. Executives are saying, take the name off the back of the jersey. He's horrible. That's what executives are now going on record saying. So, yeah, Eli Manning, man, he's stinking it up to a place where everyone's seeing it.
Man, y'all put me in a position where I got to defend Eli Manning, and I'm going to.
All right.
Because I'm just going to, Nigel Bradham and all these guys talking smack, this is weak. This is coward. You know why they're going after Eli?
What?
Because he don't wear one of them 70s or 60s up front and can actually touch them the next time he sees him. Them offensive linemen are the reason why this dude's running his mouth and he can get to Eli. Again, I'm not saying Eli's great, but when you have that little time to throw the football, that's what gets defensive players excited. So I'd rather hear Nigel run his mouth about them big guys up front and say, man, I can't wait to see them next time.
Well,
he won't say that because they can lay hands on him. Eli's a quarterback. He can't.
Well, he's looking past him because he's like, even if you do lay hands on me, Eli ain't going to get rid of the ball. Eli's not going to make the right decision. Eli's not going to do the right things. Every single
time. Why are you saying that, man? This dude got two Super Bowls.
Oh, so that's how we play it?
No.
Look, when I was sorry, I was sorry. I could not hang up all pros on the years I was sorry. Like,
That's then, this is
if he
now.
Had time to throw, he would look better.
Oh, no, Jason, you know football. Once he is off script, once the first read is off for him, you know what happens? The play is dead. He validates why there are 2.0 quarterbacks coming. He is the validation. He is one of the changing of guard, one of the last gatekeepers of the stand in the pocket to be a pure pocket passer. That's dead for one reason. These moments when the play breaks down because he can't move.
He's standing in the Bermuda Triangle. There is no pocket. All right, to another team with a lot of drama this year, the Steelers, who have been dealing with noise around Le'Veon Bell's holdout and Antonio Brown's annex during their disappointing start to the year. Now Steelers legend Hines Ward says he finds all the off-field drama is embarrassing. All right, tell us, Marcellus, do you have an issue with Hines Ward's comments chirping in here?
Yeah, I do, man, and it's sad. Look, this is a tough job. Once you, a former player, come up here and now have to talk about the game, Hines Ward and his position, it's a tough place because there's a lot of traps out there. And one of the traps is to forget where you came from. And it's interesting that Hines Ward fell for the trap that most of us, when we retire and we become broadcasters, we become better players. Wait a minute, how that record changes the farther you get away from the game and we become perfect citizens. Because Hines Ward had his issues and he played with guys who had issues. Big Ben was on that team. Joey Porter was on that team. Antonio Brown was on that team. James Harrison, my dog, was on that team. And now you're embarrassed? Were you embarrassed when you were there? So this is what one of the traps that's out there as a former player. You start the self-righteous indignation, how we just start, oh, I can't believe that. And it just sounds a little holier than now. And
you know what? Right. Listening to you talk, we need to get my former college coach on here, Paul Shadell, our head coach, because I got to be honest. I was a locker room cancer. I was a malcontent. I complained about everything.
Yeah.
I was late to everything. And then to sit up here and listen to me trash Odell Beckham Jr.
That's what I'm saying.
My coach is like, what?
That's
if Whitlock could dye his hair and be popular, he would have done all that. And so,
right? Yeah. Now you get it, right? I'm saying, it's traps out there. This dude fell for it. Like, it's a temptation. And it's crazy. People come up to me on the streets, oh, my God, you were amazing as a player. I was like, I was all right at times, and sometimes I was really good. But it just gets grander when you leave the game, your playing career, and you start looking at things in a grander scope like you were better than that. You used to do the same things, if not worse. So that's where I don't like stuff.
Yeah,
like
I was a headache. Yeah, I was a headache.
I can tell.
1.0 my first semester. The coaches were livid. All right, finally, let's move to some NBA drama where Jimmy Butler's feud with the T-Wolves has reached a fever pitch. Well, now the Minnesota Star Tribune reports that a Bulls insider traces Jimmy's annex to his friendship with Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark. Yeah. So writing, quote, the suggestion was that Jimmy came into the league driven by his underdog status, and that changed a few years later when he started hanging out with Marky Mark and seeing himself as a star. All right, tell us, Marcellus, do you blame Mark Wahlberg for Butler losing his mind?
Boy, you just earned your money. You had to say that, huh? You had to ask this question. This is so ignorant. I mean, your friends, all of a sudden, you hang with Mark Wahlberg. What does that sound like? What does that look like? Two brunches a year? I mean, like, you're not with Mark Wahlberg. One, he's busy. Two,
no, I think they said they hang out kind of on a regular. They
okay,
boy, they texting and, you know, they boys.
I know Mark Wahlberg because he's partners with one of my best friends from college, and they just started a new company. Guess what? Mark Wahlberg is way busier than what we think and what we lean on to. And to attach that to him and say you Hollywood because you got a Hollywood friend, this is not that. This is a guy who had to climb up the mountain, who was a scrappy player, who has overachieved maybe based on what his physical skills were, and is now opening up and unveiling who he really is. That happens all walks of life all the time where you shouldn't make a day one assessment of who someone is. Let the person breathe and grow in that room. He's a four-time NBA All-Star now. You think he's gonna act like he's just a puppy again?
I don't know, man. I'm gonna tell you something. I was probably 170 pounds and then I started listening to Heavy D, the rapper.
I'm not.
It changed all of me. And
what?
No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I'm about to say, the fat boys didn't get you first? No, man.
I kind of buy into this a little bit.
How?
You start, you're an athlete. I see athletes all the time start running with these celebrities in other fields. and they want to be a little bit of drama kings. And again, that's what my concern is with LeBron moving out here to L.A. And next thing you know, you're kicking with DiCaprio and Al Pacino, and you start taking on them Hollywood ways, man.
But how come?
Rather than the athletic ways.
Well, there is a difference in that, but I'm not blaming that on Mark Wahlberg, because this is a guy who had an underdog mentality. And what comes with an underdog mentality is you're understated. But then you realize, I'm not the underdog now. I'm the favorite. I'm the man. And it has nothing to do with Mark Wahlberg. It's by I've earned the right to now speak up, and I can be the one that's bringing the noise instead of the one that's always got to sit quietly.
I don't know. I make it a point not to have Hollywood friends. I try to keep my friends from back in the day. I like broke friends, to be honest with you.
So you can feel like the man.
I keep that broke mentality. I like to have a broke mentality. It keeps me hungry. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. All right, you know, guys know I can't stand social media.
Yeah, all right.
Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here to teach me what's going on good. Oh, love that shirt.
Yes, yeah, that shirt fire.
Get him with that Dub C.
Dub C. Say something to me, Marcellus. What you got today?
Can you at least be from L.A. if you're going to throw up Dub C? Can you at least?
We got a big game tonight. Undefeated Warren Central versus undefeated Bowling Green, Kentucky.
15th in the nation, huh?
We 15th in the nation.
What you over there flexing for? Y'all were 15th.
Dude, I love We were number 9 in the nation. Undefeated number 9 in the nation.
First state championship.
Yeah, trust me, first state. We put Warren on the map. Go ahead, Darnell, what you got?
Yes, sir. We're going to start with something that happened at the White House yesterday, where President Trump met with rapper Kanye West, and Twitter was outraged. But former NFL player Herschel Walker defended the meeting, tweeting, quote, "Went to bed appalled over Don Lemon's despicable behavior, laughing at Tara Satmire and Bakari Sellers' awful remarks about Kanye West's visit with Donald Trump. Woke up wondering why CNN doesn't take all three off the air." Y'all like Herschel sticking up for Kanye here?
I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with anybody being authentic with their beliefs. And I do think we got to move beyond this stage of ridiculing people we disagree with instead of engaging with people we disagree with and trying to offer them your perspective to see if it moves their perspective.
Exactly. That's what's most disturbing. It's not so much that someone disagrees with you. It's the fact that now we have closed our ears to that disagreement. And then we ridicule the person on the other side. And that doesn't bring you any closer. No different enlightenment. No necessary level of engagement. It's just look at you and everyone pile on that. And then guess what that person's over there saying? Well, then look at you and everyone piles on that. And we don't move the ball up the field anywhere. It's crazy. Yeah.
Don't know. All right, what's next?
Yeah, I know y'all remember LeBron's new HBO show, The Shop. Well, a new episode comes out tonight, and LeBron's definitely excited about it, tweeting, "Can't wait for y'all to see episode 2. It's beyond what you can imagine." Let's take a look at the trailer.
Rap purists and people who just love conversation, they love to say, "Hey, man, there's no rules." But there are rules.
I'd rather fail being who I am than fail being somebody they want me to be.
I'm telling you.
We have to fight these battles, so hopefully your daughter won't have to.
I had like terrible haircuts for a huge portion of my life.
Right? We've seen you as the kids' pictures.
I have the round lineup going into the ice pick.
Y'all gonna be watching this?
Yeah, I'm gonna take a peek. You know, I'm hoping that it's gonna be better than the last episode, which I did not like. But I think when they move you to Friday night, that's not a good sign.
That's not a good sign?
That's not a good sign. The premiere was on a Tuesday. Right, right. Friday night, everybody's going to be out in the club kicking it. Yeah. I don't think they worried about where Drake and LeBron whining about how terrible America is. We had to overcome everything drinking this wine in a barbershop. That ain't how I want to start my Friday night, but I'll take a peek.
I'm Shaq at the free throw line. I'm 0-2. I'm not watching this one because I ain't watching the first one. I don't like barbershops, and I know that a lot of times people want to pull my black card. I ain't got 3 hours for $30 for you to talk about sports. I do that already. And then I shave my head on purpose because I don't want to deal with it. And then I don't know, man. It just doesn't seem like it's high-level thought. It's just a great social commentary, which is cool. But I'm not, like, chiming in on everybody's conversation.
You know what?
I'm not trying to hear that.
I got a suggestion for these guys, for Drake, LeBron, Maverick. They should watch this show.
Yeah, we talking about something.
Intelligent thought, diversity of opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody getting along, even when we disagree. They should watch this show. Yeah. Maybe we should change this to The Shop.
Yeah, I'm a binge watch it. The Shop. I'm a binge watch it. When they're all done, then I'm going to catch up on it.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, meanwhile, going with LeBron's new teammate, Lonzo Ball, who's back on the court making his season debut coming off the bench Wednesday night against the Warriors. His first three-point attempt resulted in an air ball, and his teammate Josh Hart couldn't help but throw a little shade his way, tweeting, "Way to hold that follow-through, my guy." This is supposed to be Lonzo's new and improved form. Will Ball shot be the butt of all jokes this year?
Maybe. I like this. I don't see this as anything negative or bad. Mm-hmm. This is good-natured. This is what you definitely do in a locker room, and they're giving you a little peek at that. I don't read anything into this. And I have to admit, I thought Lonzo physically looked better on the court.
Oh, yeah.
And so I actually have a little bit of hope that, you know, he started with an air ball, but he'll be catching the rim by midseason.
He's catching the rim. Getting the rebounds and you ain't even got to jump. Wow,
right back at you.
Chill out, Lonzo. Ricochets. Hey, you know what's crazy? One, he's going to start making them because, look, he's out there nervous. All the conversations about his new shot, his new form, and he hadn't played in like 6 months. So, yeah, I expect – first shot, though, I was laughing. Even Mark Jackson on the broadcast was like, Dave, do we really need to talk about how good his form looks? Yeah, out there causing wind tunnels. So, look, get better, Lonzo, and I know you will.
Darnell, what's next?
Yes, sir. Moving on to the NFL and a debatable penalty call on T.J. Watt. He was fined over $20,000 for a roughing the passer penalty on Sunday against the Falcons. New York Post writer Andrew Marchand questioned the NFLPA, tweeting, "How weak is the NFLPA for ever agreeing to any CBA that would make this possible?" Does he have a point?
He has a hell of a point. I saw this tweet. They took 38% of T.J. Watt's paycheck with this fine.
Yeah.
Or a hit like this. And this is my problem with Damaris Smith and the NFLPA, man. They always out here on this Twitter stuff rather than the real stuff that's hurting these NFL players. 38% of the man's check for that? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but is that an NFLPA issue? When the competition committee says, hey, we're gonna change the rules, alter the rules to a place to make the game safer? Like, who's sitting there on the other side? Who's adversarial to that? This is a bad play. This is a bad call, and he shouldn't be fined. But to attach it to the NFLPA, isn't that a stretch?
If they're taking 38% of this man's money, I want my union to say, hey, man, this is over the top.
Okay, maximum fine based on
salary.
Yeah, based on earnings. I'll give you that. But the NFLPA, it's just umbrella like the NFLPA is sitting there saying, we were in support of making the game safer, including this. I think they were saying, make the game safer, excluding crazy stuff like
that. All right, last one. Go ahead, Darnell.
Yes, sir. Yesterday morning, I got up early to watch First Things First. And our guy, Nick Wright, had an interesting take on the Browns and where they could finish this season. Take a listen.
I just think they have enough talent. And because they, maybe they could have four wins right now. But 2-2-1, you're fine. Like in the AFC and the AFC North, even with Cincy at 4-1, you're fine. So could they win 9 games and be a playoff team? Absolutely they could.
Is Nick Wright on to something here?
I do think, and I've heard Cal Herb make this point, like, man, Cleveland's got a serious defense.
Yeah.
A serious defense. Maybe the one of two or three best defenses in the league. But 9 wins seems ambitious when you've already given away 2 and you play in a brutal AFC North. But I understand where Nick's coming from.
Yeah, I'm looking at the standings right here in the AFC, and it's interesting. Only 2 teams have fewer losses. There are a lot of them log-jammed at 2 losses like Cleveland and 3 losses, which is helping their cause. I thought they were going to win 6 to 8 games. I could give you 9 because I didn't expect them to be at this point this fast. So, yeah, and it looks like a suppressed AFC in terms of records. So, you know, division leaders out there with 3-2 records, and Cleveland has a 2-2-1 record. So, yeah, it can
already happen. Thrown away a couple of games. I just don't think you can get those back. And if they win 9 games, they better give Hugh one of them John Gruden-like lifetime contracts if he gets them to 9 games with a rookie quarterback. Yeah. Great job. Great shirt.
Yes, sir.
Go
yes, sir.
Warren Central. Ramir Elliott, David Bell, Jaden George.
Who are they?
Great.
Remember the names, Marcellus.
Remember
the names. Of yesteryear or now?
David Bell is going to be an NFL superstar, man. Love it.
Okay.
All right, today we're talking about Odell Beckham Jr., who looks bad on and off the field, catching 6 balls for 44 yards and headbutting a fan during a sideline meltdown. I'm not very high on Odell these days. I have him at a total of 66. His job performance right now, 18. All-time greatness, a 16.
Respect.
Authenticity, a 22. I think he's very authentic, Marcellus. I think he is who he is.
He is.
I'm a little down on his character at 10, and that's why I have him at a total of 66. He is a solid role player right now, not quite an all-star.
Odell Beckham Jr. is a solid role player.
An approval rating, yeah.
Give me the character. Like, explain further the character issues.
I think I saw him in bed with drugs and a young woman. I knock him down.
You think you saw that?
I think I saw it over Instagram.
Goals.
And then I...
Hashtag. Now, let me stop. I got a kid.
And then I think I saw him on a boat party before a playoff.
Playoff game.
Tony Romo lost. And he played terrible. That's poor character. His lack of leadership in that locker room, that's poor character.
Lack of leadership.
Let me give you some real numbers right here. I give you some all-star numbers for Odell Beckham. 21 in job performance. The guy has NFL historical numbers on pace.
How's he playing right now? How can he be a 21 right now? His numbers are trash. That's worst of his career.
Eli took four away from the 25 I wanted to give him because the dude is so good. All-time greatness already better than most in terms of you won't forget Odell.
Three seasons.
Hey, man, that's on him. He did that. Character, 17. I'm with you. I'm with you, but not as far as you go, I'm not respecting. He's not
the blonde hair. You go with the blonde hair. That's a character.
Look,
he's
only guilty of getting attention, and that's a you problem. stop staring at him. Stop. This dude is a superstar. And last but not least, authenticity. 16, and that's a drop. Last night was a lot. I don't like dudes trying to project and produce like I'm passionate. Like everyone, look at me. Oh, I care more than them. No, you don't. Don't do all that stuff, bro. I've been in the locker room too many times seeing that fakeness. So I get it, Odell. You want it. Everyone else wants it, too, whether they're sitting there yawning or they're sitting there grinding. But his is a little production at times.
You got him at a 72, only 6 points higher than me. You act like, well, there's some great disparity.
But it's a big difference in title.